Well, hello. Welcome back to the Memory Core. It is a boiling 95 degrees outside at the towards the tail end of May. Unexpected.
Very unexpected.
We've blown past sandals and socks weather and went right into just straight up sandals weather.
Sandals and socks.
A little disappointing.
Crocs and socks.
Crocs and socks. Oh man, Crocs don't breathe. They just don't. We are currently enjoying a red ale from a local brewery. So if any of you are in the area and you head over to Elder Brewing in downtown Joliet, it's worth checking out.
It is so good. So good.
Yeah. So, since we last met and talked... Bird was the word. You can hear in the background Dan's air conditioner going off because we do not have a recording studio. We're just two bums in a basement right now.
We do not want to sit outside right now.
No, no.
I mean, I would. I decided to wear shorts, but... Yeah.
Well, just because it's just... Hearing the furnace going off is one thing. Hearing the air conditioner on the outside is another. You know, we're just hearing the fan on the furnace blowing cold air around the house.
Yeah, it works for now.
But yeah, we've spent time stewing on Hour of the Wolf. And just...
You mostly.
Me mostly, yeah. Lots of stewing. Lots and lots of stewing. We're, Yeah, we'll do a breakdown. I think we're just debating how we want it to look, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of, mental preparedness we have to do, too, because we have to read the book again.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Fuck.
That was your idea, unfortunately.
I know.
But, it would be a good idea to give it another fair shake.
Well, if we're gonna do it, we gotta really... Took the time to break it apart. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, a lot of note-taking, you know.
You know, sort of one of the things we were wondering about is, you know, how does this look? Like, should we do an actual video of us talking? Because it was sort of... Because you had the idea of doing the half in the bag thing. Like, you know, just sitting there and...
Half in the bag. Hour of the Wolf was a great Battletech novel.
And then, of course, there was the idea of, like, well... You know, I like Lindsay Ellis a lot and her breakdowns. So, like, oh... Adam, what'd you think about the Wolf? I hated it. Thanks for asking.
I mean, I AVGN it.
yeah. AVGN, it's not the same, though.
You can adapt it.
Yeah. I
could.
AVGN's not been the same for a couple of years, though, now. It's
true.
Not
true.
The same. But, yeah, just trying to think about what the format looks like, how to break it down. Because, I mean, every time I think about it, and every time I read something about it or someone asks a question about it, I just get angrier because it just gets dumber.
Yeah, the more, I mean, you stewed about it a lot more than I did, but the more even I think about it, it's almost like we can reference that thread on the forums.
Yeah.
But like it bothers me more and more. What really got me too was just thinking about the whole Clan Ghost Bear reaction to it.
Yeah,
you know, it's such a stereotypical brush under the rug.
Well, it's lazy.
Yeah, and that's pretty much where I was going to go with it. It's very lazy. It's like if somebody read the cliff notes on Clan Ghost Bear, it's like they probably read a paragraph of it and just went, "Oh, Ghost Bear totem, bear weight, bear attack when stepped on." You know,
yeah,
like. And that was essentially their reaction. And it drives me nuts because there's so much more to that clan. But, you know, in all fairness, there's so much more to Clan Wolf and Clan Jade Falcon than we've freaking got in that book, too.
Oh, totally. Totally.
You know?
Totally.
At least the Diamond Shark one made sense. Or Sea Fox.
Sea Fox, yeah.
I mean, they would just be like, can we make bank on this? Sure.
Yeah.
Whatever. You can have Terra.
Yeah. Yeah, Hour of the Wolf. I mean, it makes me angry. Just thinking about it makes me angry. And then there's another thread asking about the Old Guard on there. So for those who haven't read Hour of the Wolf, there's a new Republic regiment. It's basically Pardo trying to reference the Napoleonic Old Guard because he's a military historian. Nah. Fucking air quotes on that one. But the idea that the Old Guard exists, or the idea that there would be an Old Guard, is not the problem. The problem is that it's just another unit for the clans to just steamroll. You know, it's a scene that Pardo thinks is going to be epic, and it's not at all. A lot of it even happens off screen anyway, so what the fuck is the point of even doing it?
Yeah. It's kind of like what you said. When you read a source book, you get something different than if you read a novel. And in this novel, we didn't get anything we didn't essentially already know. Even though, like, it was a whole new battle.
Yeah, it wouldn't be anything that wouldn't show up in a source book anyway.
I know.
So, yeah, I mean, not to be too sidetracked about it, because, I mean, there's plenty to bitch about in Hour of the Wolf. And, oh, boy, I'm a bitch about it.
It's okay. But you know what? You know who has way more personality than Alaric? Alexander Kerensky.
I was going to say a sheet of A2 printer paper.
Alexander Kerensky.
But, okay.
Alexander Kerensky.
Yeah.
We're finally doing the last Clan episode.
Yeah, yeah. Or at least there's sort of the issue, like, with the meta of the clans and how they came to be, you know, their formation, the problems and pitfalls of their implementation. Now, Alexander Kerensky.
Yeah, to kind of begin, if you guys have been living under a rock for the past 30, 40 years, Alexander Kerensky is arguably, and it's pretty heavy on the arguably side, the biggest character of Battletech.
Yeah, I mean, he's, in general, there's a pretty good positive attitude towards him, especially if there's sort of a surface level knowledge of Battletech. He is well regarded amongst both the Inner Sphere and the clans. Not so much the periphery, fair enough, but that's only a surface level. There's a lot more to break down about it, and a lot of, you know, his character flaws, which is fine. It's fine. That's the whole point of it. I'm not going to hate him because he's just a character, right? It's just, this is what he was written to be, what he was written to do, and that's fine, but it's worth taking a look at it and pointing out his flaws, because he's not perfect.
No.
And he's kind of shitty, too. Which is okay, because that's the point.
Yeah, it's totally the point. He's definitely... Yeah, he drives the universe so much, like, even in the cartoon. Like, he's basically a curse word.
Yeah.
You know? Like, what in the name of Kerensky? Better than Blitzking, I guess.
Oh, God, he's better than Blitzking.
Anyway, we'll stay on track. Oh, okay. Don't worry. Okay. Okay. I see your face is turning red.
You know, he had that other short story. He had put some other...
Kerensky.
Kerensky. Stupid swear.
Kerensky.
Goddamn dumb.
That was my fault. Kerensky.
So, the main point behind Kerensky when the universe first started was clearly to sort of evoke this Arthurian mythos, right? He's gone. He took the Star League with him. He'll be back when the Inner Sphere needs him most. That Arthurian myth. You know, he's gone to Avalon.
Yeah.
And that works. But, of course, the more you delve into it, and maybe not so much the original Star League source book, although it's in there, but especially with the Liberation of Terra series and Operation Klondike, there's a lot more to see. And, you know, overall, and I think you'd agree too, Dan, right? Kerensky is a very morally upstanding person. Like, he does his best to be just a good guy, right?
Yeah, he definitely tries hard at that. And that's part of, if not one of his biggest flaws as a commander.
Yeah,
because it really makes him sort of a pushover.
It does, and you know, you contrast Kerensky with particularly the Star League generals during their unification war, particularly, I think it's Amos Furlow, who, by the way, his portrait is based off of Michael Ironside, I think from maybe like a screen grab from Starship Troopers. Michael Ironside's great actor. Amazing voice actor, the voice of Darkseid from the DC animated universe. Not that shit with Zack Snyder and Justice League. That was goddamn awful. But anyway, you know, Amos Furlow, I mean, he was known as a baby killer. I mean, war crimes abound when Amos Furlow is in town. It gets messy, and that wasn't Kerensky's bag.
Yeah, it's kind of strange how war crimes seem to follow the poor guy. It really is.
Yeah.
I mean, he is a general, but Well, maybe not in that sense, but yeah, like it's definitely really strange.
I mean, from your perspective, do you remember anything about how good Kerensky was tactically? I mean, I don't think it's really been discussed about or shown his abilities on a tactical level.
No, it really hasn't. I mean, going through the old Star League book, it's pretty cut and dry.
Yeah.
You know, like,
That wasn't Kerensky's job, I suppose, really, on that deep down of a level. I mean, his was more pointing people in directions and telling them to figure it out.
Yeah, to me, the impression I got, and mind you, I only went through Operation Klondike and the original Star League book, because that's all I had. I know you went through
the Liberation of Terra.
Yeah. Was that his decisions were more based off the people that he was surrounded by. And the people he surrounded himself with weren't like your... They weren't yes men.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Which made him...
Duchevalier in particular is willing to challenge him in spots.
Yeah, and it made him a good leader in the sense that he had the right people backing him at the right time.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll get into it later, but that's part of the reason why the Exodus kind of went south.
Yeah.
You know, because that was... probably the only time he was completely in charge of something.
Yeah, I can see that. You know, I look at the Star League Defense Force as being very similar to the armies of ancient Rome, the Republic and the Empire. You know, they're described as having an almost endless logistics chain.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be good at war if you have essentially nearly unlimited resources, or at least resources beyond your opponent. You know, with Rome doesn't have a lot of really talented generals. I mean, outside of someone like Scipio Africanus or Julius Caesar, their really main goal is just to wear their opponents down. I mean, you get to, say, Carthage, who had Hannibal. You know, they had to have Hannibal to be that at least as successful as they were.
Mm-hmm.
You get to the Hellenistic states, you know, their usual modus operandi was to, you know, start a campaign, have a couple of fights. When they have a major fight that involves getting the royal armies together, if you lost that fight, you tended to dust your hands of it, sign a peace treaty, because you didn't want to lose too many men. You lose too many men, you're going to damage your economy too much. You may not have enough individuals then to garrison the rest of the state, if you pull men from other parts of the state. Rome didn't fucking care. Rome was like, so what? We got plenty of babies.
If you're
the kids, you know?
Yeah, I mean, but if you're the... It further, you know, glosses over your point. If you're commander of the Star League, I mean, that's a lot to bear on your shoulders. You are the strongest army.
Yeah.
You know, and you can afford to just throw people at things, but you can only do so much because you have the other successor states basically watching every move that you make.
Mm. You know? Yeah, I mean, with reunification war, it was easy. I think with the Periphery Uprising and then Liberation of Terra,
mm-hmm.
with the Operation Chieftain, it was a different story. They didn't have quite the access to those resources, but you have a command structure and a strategic and tactical education that's based around almost having limitless supplies.
Yeah.
And I suppose it really doesn't matter that we don't see Kerensky's tactical abilities at that level, because he came up in an era when there wasn't major wars. I mean, there were the Hidden Wars and other factors that involved the Star League Defense Force being in play. But, you know, if you're part of the central command structure of the SLDF, I mean, you're not out there on a day-to-day level doing stuff.
No.
So you don't need to know how to be good at that.
Well, here's the thing about him, too. He, at least this is what I got out of it, too. He never wanted the position that he got.
Yeah.
You know, and that's partly because of his, you know, his main personality flaw. He's generally a good guy. Mm-hmm. You know, like responsibility. It's not that he couldn't. I mean, well, you know what? That's probably why he couldn't handle it so well. You know, but where was I going with it? He,
Well, you know, and to back up a little bit, I mean, to your point, yeah. There is that short story. And I don't know if there was ever any further parts to it. Mm-hmm. It might have been one of those things that just died in the vine like so much else has on the IP. But there was, I think Lauren Coleman did the short story, and it was about Kerensky's time at the Niggler Ring. He was like, I think, a fresh-faced student. And, you know, his friendship with, I think, Michael Steiner, who was going to become Archon.
Yeah, that was referenced in that book, that was one of his good friends.
Yeah, and that's, he ended up dying, I think. I can't remember how that timeline worked out, but, basically the future Archon of the Commonwealth was a professor at the Niggler Ring, and Kerensky was learning from him, and Kerensky being a descendant of someone, another Kerensky that had saved the life of a First Lord, got all these perks. It's just like the family in perpetuity got all these perks. And of course, Kerensky took advantage of it. And that's where he met. That's where kind of fate intervened. And they said, oh, well, you got really good brain scans. You have all these skills. You should become a mech warrior. And I think the end of that story was him basically starting training to become a mech warrior. And he had like the usual sort of, like high school / college, movie tropes of, oh, there's the bully, and oh, he beats the bully up, and it is what it is, right? But he didn't even want to be a mech warrior. It wasn't even on the list of things he wanted to do, and he fell into it.
You can't blame him. He had a good mech, though.
He had an Orion, right? You can't go wrong. You
can't go wrong with the Orion. It's kind of funny, like that whole setup is about as lame as it is with the whole setup about, like, these stories about clan warriors, because those are even all the same.
They are.
They really are.
They really are.
Trial, trial, trial.
Yeah. If you're reading a clan story, you're gonna see it probably opens up with the trial of position, so you can trial to get into a unit, and then at that point, then there's a trial afterwards to see if your unit can participate in another trial, and then there's a trial after that to, I don't know, conquer some objective, and there's another trial to get a blood name. So you have trial to get a trial, so you can trial to trial and trial, till eventually trial to win the whole trials. That's clan.
Yeah, stuff. And then there's some other jerk clan that gets in your way, too. Jeez.
Yeah.
That doesn't help either. No.
It is what it is. It's...
At least Kerensky's story is interesting, though.
Yeah, yeah.
He...
So to swing back, we don't really see much of Kerensky on the sort of the tactical level. Like, what we would associate on the clever moves, the bait and switch, the feints.
The way that the clan see him as this like esteemed, awesome general.
Because I think even the back,
great father.
Even the back of the Star League book. And in that time of great deeds to the greatest warrior of all time, Alexander Kerensky, right?
Yeah.
So even in the back of the original Star League book, they're talking to him as he's the greatest warrior. And we know he's a good mech pilot. We know that.
Yeah.
But obviously that doesn't necessarily translate to his actual leadership skills. And it does seem that overall, Kerensky's a good guy. He's someone you would want to be your boss.
You'd have a beer with him.
Yeah. He's going to treat you well. And he's not going to... we know he's an academic. So we know he's intelligent. We know he thinks about things on a deeper level.
One of his first acts as commander, too, because he did inherit it when his sort, I would say, like his mentor stepped down. Like she actually stepped down because she couldn't handle all of the corruption in the ranks of the whole Star League Defense Force. One of his first acts was to basically go through and weed all of that out.
Yeah.
So like he did learn. It's not that he learned that, because we'll get to that later, why he was a real shit learner.
Yeah.
he was not good at learning anything. But, like, he could definitely... He was definitely able to restructure and earn the place that he had as probably the moral compass of the SLDF.
Yeah.
Just by his actions alone.
Yeah, he really comes off as someone who is fair and progressive. And, there was a cool thing on NPR about this, sort of the idea of retributive justice versus restorative justice.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, there are definitely, crimes and slights against individuals that, deserve harsher punishments. But, he doesn't seem like the guy that would give you just a slap in the wrist, but he's not the guy that, like, court-martial you and cut your head off, right?
Yeah.
He would find obviously some middle ground. And so people that deserve promotion or accolades got those accolades, and that people that, you know, deserved some sort of punishment or correction got the right amount of correction.
Because he still understood the value.
Yeah. Because even after they retook Terra, he didn't immediately, you know, kill Imaris. I mean, they could have stepped on him like a bug.
He could have, yeah.
And there was a lot of things he could have done that he didn't do. But I mean, despite being probably an all-around A-plus guy, you know, just a good person, he has some pretty major flaws that seem to keep coming up that are the same problems over and over and over again.
Yeah. For a man who was mentored essentially about corruption and learned it firsthand, he didn't learn shit, because he should have seen that with Imaris from day one. He had I'm sure he had his suspicions, but he was such a good guy that he gave him the benefit of the doubt.
He saw it, but he didn't do anything about it.
And he couldn't even, and this is like way in the future of where we're going to get, but he couldn't even see that with his own kid.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I mean, it's pretty clear that, you know, Nicholas Kerensky was ended up being
he was a bigger dick.
Yeah, he was kind of a fascist piece of shit.
Oh, yeah. Like Grand Smoke Jaguar.
And I mean, oddly enough, of all the authors, right? Pardo, right? Pardo wrote the biography for the Clan Wolf source book on Nicholas Kerensky.
Really?
And he even said that, yeah.
Hey, side note, he was also the editor for Star-Lord.
Yeah, and additional writing credits. Oh, boy.
Oh, that's going to be a fun episode.
But you know, Pardo came out and said that, you know, all the way from the beginning. I mean, they were aware and they were planning out that Nicholas Kerensky was going to be not okay in the head. And that he was kind of a bit, totally, a lot, entirely a monster. And, you know, obviously with the way they were writing things, it was going to be one of those things that they're going to slowly reveal this stuff throughout the years, throughout different products. But yeah, Alexander Kerensky has a problem of not recognizing or foreseeing fairly obvious problems and confronting them or putting a stop to them early.
Yeah.
He lets things sort of sit and fester until they become an abscess that bursts open.
Yeah, like when originally when the whole Cameron fiasco happened, I'm not talking about the assassination yet, but when Richard Cameron was basically in power, originally they wanted Kerensky to take the spot.
To be regent, yeah.
Yeah, and he didn't want it. He didn't, and you know, that again, because he's generally a good guy, he didn't want the responsibility. It was too much for him, but the pressure put him in that position. And I almost feel like that right there, not the assassination of Richard Cameron, but that moment right there was basically what sealed the fate of the Star League, putting all of that on his shoulders. Because I almost feel like the House Lords knew that, Just by his track record alone up to that point, that putting him in a position like that was going to doom the Star League.
Well, and they probably knew that when he was busy enough being commanding general of the SLDF.
Oh, yeah.
Which obviously, I mean, the thing is, okay, he's not out there doing drills and doing push-ups like everybody else is, but he's got a lot on his plate. You know, a lot of paperwork and logistics. There's probably just a whole mess of problems he has to deal
with. At that point, he was basically made into a celebrity too.
And there's no way he could do both jobs at once. And they probably saw it to their benefit, because they saw that Richard Cameron was nutty. There's probably enough rumors that are making their way around.
Joffrey before Joffrey.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Maybe not as bad, but still there.
And speaking of Battletech, you know, Clovis being Tyrion before Tyrion.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, the House Lords probably saw it as a really good opportunity to take advantage of the disarray and the weakness in the Star League government to build up their armies and take advantage of a lot of different opportunities, you know, covertly and overtly, that wasn't possible under stronger First Lords, which was disappointing, but understandable considering their history.
Yeah. I think that's a pretty big reason why Amaris was able to take the spot that he did, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, and yep. of course, Amaris put on a show, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, he put on a show of being a... You know, it's kind of funny, too, because you know, we're in this era, right, where we're seeing a lot of anti-Asian American hate crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when the Star League book was written and a lot of the Battletech stuff was written in the 80s, there's probably still a lot of really uncomfortable Asian stereotypes and tropes. And it was pretty clear that what Amaris was doing was trying to play up to something that we would recognize as being one of those tropes.
Yeah.
You know, oh, he's just being a goofy fat Asian dude. You know, he's got a you know, funny haircut and he wears a bib.
Yeah.
And then it turns out really he's brilliant, although probably the stress of everything turned him psychotic. After, you know, being under siege for 10 years.
I mean, you can look at his past and just see, like, the hell this man was dragged through.
Yeah.
His family, you know, just because of the Cameron family.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying the guy was right for what he did.
No,
but
no.
The motivations were definitely there.
Yeah, motivations were there. Mm-hmm. But you start to see, you know, this issue of, you know, Kerensky not taking the job of Regent seriously and not really being able to say, hey, I'm not doing this because I actually can't do this, which also shows up later, you know, not knowing mm-hmm. when to give something up. But this problem of not confronting things has shown up multiple times. I mean, it shows up with the Amaris coup and Richard Cameron being awful, you know, not really being willing to replace him, not foreseeing the difficulty with the First Lords, not foreseeing the need to provide a strong and stable government for Reconstruction post-Amaris coup, the problems with the Exodus and not having an actual place to go and just wandering, you know, coreward of the Inner Sphere for a year and a half. It's just, like, don't know where we're getting, where we're going. You guys just got to stay patient on your fucking dropships and your warships for a year and a half. And then obviously with not having secession plan for the Star League in Exile and not realizing that his son's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, where do we start? I mean, do we go backwards or do we go forwards with this? Should we go backwards? We'll go backwards because...
We'll go a little backwards.
Yeah, because I think obviously with what happened with the SLDF in Exile and the Pentagon Civil War, I mean, that's easier to kind of pinpoint some of the problems with it, right? And that comes down to... number of different things. I mean, one, trying to homogenize things is a bit tricky because you've got obviously a number of different nationalities that are all sort of piling up and being resettled. And, you know, things aren't easy. Things are hard. And it's easy to get grievances when things aren't going your way. But I think the big thing is that much like Game of Thrones Season 8, with the showrunners of that travesty, much like Hour of the Wolf, you've got the problem of Kerensky's obviously showing burnout. He shows burnout probably about right at the end of the, you know, of the Terran hegemony. Yeah. He's showing burnout there, but he knows Nicholas, his son, is not all right in the head. I mean, mm-hmm. he even has the Eden brain fever, right?
Yeah, I mean, he, and, you know, on top of that, too, Nicholas was at such a young age at the time that he did witness a lot of the war crimes that Kerensky did. I'm pretty sure it was something that Alexander really didn't like to talk about too much. But reading, like, some of the treatment that even, like, prisoners got, you know, on Earth, you know, I would think that's a pretty big reason why Nicholas was as crazy as he was.
Yeah, he was luckily really damaged as a child.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was born in, I think, 2764. So mm-hmm. he was only a couple of years old when the coup hit.
But, I mean, of course, after all of that, Kerensky's going to be tired. I mean, you got to clean up that whole mess.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
But he didn't know when to call it quits. And then as a result, with the Pentagon Civil War, there are a lot of issues that are brewing. He's not confronting those issues. But he was... How old was he when he died?
He was over 100.
Yeah.
He was over 100.
So he knows he's not going to be around forever. He has a heart attack. You're getting ready to head off the conflicts in the Pentagon before it came out into the full-blown Civil War. But mm-hmm. there was no leadership set up for afterwards.
No, there wasn't. And that's kind of what Nick was trying to establish behind his back. Yeah. So, like, the backtrack a little bit. The entire Exodus was basically just a random idea thrown out by...
De Chevalier,
yeah. And, you know, he just decided to run with it.
Yeah.
You know, and because... I almost think because of that, you know, the right preparations weren't made. It's almost like he forgot that if they were...
It seemed to happen about 6 or 7 months, I think.
Yeah, they were really lucky to get to the Pentagon Worlds as fast as they did. You know, it just seemed like it happened just at the neck of time.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, like, the whole time, just even reading about it in Operation Klondike, Kerensky really had no idea how to deal with it.
Yeah.
To the point where the true colors of Nicholas really started to shine, and he couldn't really pick that up. He was such a, like, shithead to Andrei.
Yeah,
the whole
and
trip,
that,
too.
And that really shows up in at least the first book of the Finding of the Clans trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I read that years ago because it was out on Battle Corps. Because it was originally published. So it was written in English, translated into German, published in Germany. Why? I don't fucking know. And then they released the first part on Battle Corps, and they just released the first part again as part of the Kickstarter. But the other two parts, I think, we're going to get. I just don't know when.
Mm-hmm.
And my assumption is, like, a good novel, like how BattleTech novels used to be, we'll probably find out if Nicholas Kerensky really did plan an assassination of his brother.
It's possible, yeah.
But yeah, we do see that Alexander is particularly hard on Andrei, especially with the Prince Eugene incident. But he's not planning what leadership is going to look like after his death or when he steps down. And then when it does happen, it causes a big fight in the Pentagon amongst the active SLDF members, which is one of the things that really starts off a whole civil war, because now it's no longer, you know, citizens and retired personnel who are fighting against what they have as grievances or what they perceive as problems in the new society. But now there's the active SODF is fracturing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that, you know, again, that's a huge problem.
You're also expecting a bunch of people in the military to go without a leader and to live like civilians.
Yeah.
You know, which can, not a lot of people can move from that.
Yeah. It's
especially with the, it was essentially a military dictatorship the whole time.
Yeah. Benevolent, because it was, you know, Alexander Kerensky is overall an upstanding guy, but when you lose that central figure,
where do you go?
Yeah, you get problems because you don't have a planned succession planned out. Kind of like another Alexander. Kind of like Alexander the Great. But then, yeah, so then you backtrack before that. Then you're in the Exodus itself, right? Because it was a couple of years where things were looking good in the Pentagon, before the Civil War set off. But you have the whole Exodus, right? So, like you said, it's a spur of the moment thing, and they had some idea, some rough idea, based on previous Starlink exploration of the Corward inner sphere, the Corward galaxy.
Yeah, they didn't completely wing it,
but they didn't have a destination because they didn't say like, okay, this is the path we're taking. It's going to be roughly, you know, a year and a half to get there, and you could say, well, okay, what if people, you know, break off and they get tired of it? Because they have a destination, you have to worry about operational security. But, you know, Kerensky couldn't even give them a time frame on it.
No.
And so, about a year in, you have the Prince Eugene incident, where the Prince Eugene, named after a World War II German battleship.
The more you know.
Dun, 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 dun. you have that happen, which is a problem. Now, granted, I'm not surprised that Kerensky didn't see Nicholas's manipulation of the situation, because mm-hmm. he knew it was going to be a problem. And also Jennifer Winson,
yeah,
who, by the way, is the illegitimate bastard daughter of incest between Richard Cameron and one of his sisters.
Wow. There's a lot of Lannister shit going on.
That's a pretty unsavory.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you have that, but, you know, Alexander should have seen, hey, we're in the middle of deep space, and we have a bunch of warships and millions of individuals, morale is going to be a problem unless they have some time frame of what's happening. Because a year and a half in deep space, that's a long time. I mean, for fuck's sake, we went like 2 weeks during the pandemic and people were bitching about not getting haircuts.
I know. Oh, man. Can you imagine? Yeah, like, can you imagine just being on a ship for an entire year?
Yeah.
You know?
And cramped conditions.
We're not talking about, like, we're all in individual houses.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You are probably close to being shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah, it's tight.
It's real tight.
You know, and those air scrubbers can only work so hard and so effectively after so long.
Oh, yeah, they were talking about the smells on some of the ships.
Yeah.
You know, when they first touched down on, what was it, Stranamekti?
Oh, no, it would be one of the Pentagon's. I think it was Eden.
Eden. Yeah, like they were talking about the stench off of one of the ships. You know, they're like, how could we survive this for so long?
Yeah.
Now that we have fresh air, it's just like the whole attitude like changed.
Yeah.
You know.
So that's obviously another problem, right? You should have foreseen that was going to be an issue, and he didn't. They just he's figured, oh well, I'll tell them to do it, and they'll just do it, which is like, that's not.
In the military, yeah, maybe.
Military, yeah, but it's still
get away with it for
not
so
really
long,
how good leadership works.
Hey, you're talking about civilians.
I mean, even in the military, I mean, that long? That's a long time.
Yeah,
that's a long time. Because say you're in a wet Navy, like say you're in the Navy, you can at least go up on top of deck and get fresh air, right? Even if you're in a fucking submarine, you have to surface eventually.
I mean,
right?
You could try on a jump ship, but you're not going to get very far.
Or you will get really.
Or
far.
Or you will get really far.
So working backwards, you know, we talked about the issue of the Pentagon Civil War and seeing there would be problems and not having a succession of leadership or a chain of command set up. And I think to an extent, right, I mean, he knew that Nicholas, while probably having a cult of personality developing around Nicholas, because Nicholas was a sociopath, he probably knew how to charm people. No, knowing that was going to be an issue, you know, he didn't say yes or no to Nicholas being a leader.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the issue with the Exodus. We also talk about Amaris. The biggest problem for me is the Terran hegemony, right? Because he left all those planets to just get fucked.
Yeah, that's a pretty big deal, isn't it?
It is.
It really is. It is. All so, based of... off of one of his men below him just throwing out a random idea. Yeah. Just let an entire nation basically crumble.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
And for those of you who aren't aware, you know, when it comes to the Star League, when the Star League is formed, because it's all Richard Cameron's Ian Cameron's, yeah, it's all Ian Cameron's baby. You know, what he says to help the other member states, you know, join, is that the Terran hegemony armed forces will become the new core of the Star League. So all the royal regiments are all raised from the Terran hegemony. They have the best gear, access to the best logistics. But what that means is that all the Terran hegemony has to defend itself is now its militia. You know, individual planetary militias. Problem is, after the Amaris coup and the development of the Amaris Empire, the militias are pretty much all, you know, wiped clean. You know, they're just devastated. There's nothing left of them except for a few holdouts on a couple of planets. So now you have a whole state with no standing army after the Exodus. No one to defend them, and they're just left open to the ravages of the succession wars as the House Lords try and pick planets off. Which is really gross. Mm-hmm. So you have, you know, hundreds of planets, the most technologically developed planets, but now have their infrastructure completely trashed because of the Civil War, you know, reduced to nothing, are left just open for invasion by the neighboring powers, which really fucking blows. I mean, if I was a hegemony planet, I would be absolutely furious at Kerensky. totally furious. And you know, the reason why I call it Civil War, and it's explained in the, it might be explained in the Starlink book, but I know it's definitely explained in the Liberation of Terra books, is that because Richard Cameron was so awful, after the coup, there are open elections, and I do not believe they were actually manipulated. I think that Richard Cameron was so unpopular that they just said, okay, sure, you can, Maris, you can be in charge. But because the Terran hegemony is a hereditable, damn it, too much beer, hereditary monarchy, it can no longer be the Terran hegemony because it's not a Cameron in charge. So therefore, it then has to become the Maris Empire. So because it was done democratically and not necessarily through usurpation, it becomes a civil war versus just fighting the usurper or whatever terminology you want to use.
Maris the usurper. Rimworlds 2.0.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, you keep going back to it is Kerensky with his exodus left the entire Terran hegemony basically defenseless and open to predation from the rest of the Inner Sphere.
Yeah. Doesn't make the House Lords look as bad. I almost feel like at that point they were just a way for him to put blame on something else to justify his actions.
And you know, not to say it was going to be easy. By no means would it be easy. But there were certain things that he could have done and been more aggressive about when it came to rebuilding the civilian structures and the governmental institutions of the hegemony post-Operation Chieftain. And I can't remember if he pardoned. Or I think he didn't. I think the idea was that anyone who served during the Maris Empire and a form of government was banned from further operation in government, which meant that a lot of people who were career civil servants could no longer be career civil servants. So then anyone who gets into government doesn't know what the fuck they're doing.
Yeah.
Because it turns out, yeah, I mean, definitely, okay, you know, we live in the U.S. Congress blows. The Senate in particular blows. But being a civil servant is not easy. I mean, if you're a person working in Census Bureau, the IRS, the Department of Health and Human Services, there's a lot of stuff you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're on the outside and it's frustrating that we're not getting the service we want. But in general, it's not easy stuff. And there's a lot of things to be aware of. And you can't just walk in and think you're going to do it better. And I think that was the case with the Terran hegemony. And so I think a lot of plans were like, oh, you know, yeah, we'll just go with the House next door. Yeah, sure. You know, Draconis Combine, good enough, whatever. And so I know a lot of planets were either being covertly conquered or they were voting to leave the Terran hegemony and join, you know, a neighboring successor state. Again, probably because Kerensky didn't really put into action anything really serious in terms of rebuilding.
Yeah. I mean, money was a problem too, because none of the successor states wanted to help him, even though he basically took out the Maris threat for him.
True.
You know, that played a pretty big factor too.
Yeah, I think some successor states did, you know, more covert support, and I think some planets did support. For example, I know Draconis Combine didn't want to openly support them because the coordinator was worried about, I think, his nephew, whether or not he was held hostage or dead.
Yeah, there were little things like that here and there.
I know Kenyon Marek had a real big grudge against Kerensky. He hated Kerensky, so he did his best to prevent the SLDF from doing anything based in the Free Worlds League. But the one thing you don't really think about, it was a good 5 years after the end of the fighting on Terra in Operation Exodus. You know, so yeah, okay, sure, the House Lords stripped Kerensky of his position, but I mean, if the Star League is gone, or at least effectively gone, wouldn't those Star League troops, or at least the Royal Regiments, default back to the Terran hegemony, right? Like,
whatever's left of it, at least.
Yeah.
You know.
And I mean, everyone said, oh, well, you know, he didn't want the SLDF to become weapons of the new war or something like that. Because, I mean, there were SLDF regiments leaving behind the SLDF and joining up with House Lords. It's where, like, the Crucis Lancers came from and a lot of mercenary commands. But, you know, at the same time, so what? You know, get your shit together. Or if you don't want to do it, find somebody else to do it. Because De Chevalier was going to do it. We know De Chevalier was going to do it because we have the Empires of Flame free RPG supplement that Herb Bias put out.
Yeah.
Right? And that basically the setting for that is that Kerensky gets assassinated before announcing Operation Exodus. And De Chevalier says, okay, I guess I'm in charge now. And then reconstitutes the Terran Hegemony Armed Forces. And
he does a better job.
He does a better job.
He does a better job.
Yeah.
Which, again, proves our point. I mean, I know it's like, you know, just like a, like almost like a fan thing.
Yeah.
At this point, you know, but it just shows, like, even behind the scenes, they at least knew that Kerensky wasn't a really good decision maker on his own.
Yeah. And hey, fair enough. He's burnt out. I get it. He's burnt out. I'd be burnt out too. No one to step aside.
You
know, don't leave a whole interstellar state defenseless because you're burnt out and decided to take your ball and go home.
Yeah.
They still had the most warships of any... I think they had more warships than the other five successor states combined. Shit, they still had a bigger military than any individual successor state.
Yeah.
Kerensky could have just said, hey, I'm sitting on the Terran Hegemony, and that's it. Any of you fuckers...
Try me.
Try me. Try it. Try it. Come at me, bro.
Yeah. Go ahead, I dare you.
Yeah.
I'll go smoke Jaguar on your ass. Little ahead of its time.
A little bit. One of the things I bet's not going to happen, though, in this Ill-Clan era, although it'd be amazing if it did, is because Kerensky's legacy in the Terran Hegemony worlds, and probably on Terra itself, is not great because of what he did. Man, it would be amazing if there were a bunch of gorillas on Terra after the events of Hour of the Wolf that just decided,
nah.
No, fuck you guys. And they bomb the Kerensky Chapel.
Oh, yeah.
And it just totally destroy his body and the whole chapel.
Yeah, watch the other clans really not care.
Yeah. They have to think, well, what do they do? Do we go nuts and orbitally bombard all of Terra? Or do we take a step back and realize that...
Oh, well, I mean, the Jaguars are back.
Jaguars are back. Yeah, the Jaguars are back.
Jaguars are back.
Or we decide the whole population can't be responsible for a small group's actions. That'd be amazing. That'd be amazing. But they just decide, yeah, you're here, but you forget, we don't like you guys, because you left us to die to go fuck off on some... magical mystery tour in deep space, and you came back as a bunch of fascist assholes who cry about eugenics. We're gonna blow up your god.
I don't see anywhere else they could really go with this.
That would be awesome, but they won't do it. They won't.
They'll revive Clan Burak, and they'll bring Clan Blood Spirit back. Revivals for everybody. Operation Bulldog didn't matter. Who cares?
I'd love to see Mongoose back.
Yeah, oh, Jesus. You know what? You want to give everyone a boner? Clan Wolverine comes back.
Here's the problem, though. You know who's going to write it?
Blaine Pardo.
Yeah, it's not going to be worth it.
No,
it's not going to be good. It's not going to be good.
They're tearing down statues again. It's terrible.
Oh, man. Heritage, not hate.
Yeah.
Oh. So, yeah, that's... basically, our summary of Alexander Kerensky. You know, he's a morally upstanding guy, but he has a lot of flaws, and his flaws are major factors in the events that happen in the universe. You know, and it goes all the way from not understanding what was happening with Amaris and Cameron, and not putting a stop to Cameron as a leader.
Yeah,
to leaving the Terran Hegemony defenseless, and the whole argument of not wanting to make the First Succession War any worse. That's a lame argument. Anyway, you know, fair enough. It had to happen. You know, if they were going to do this whole Arthurian myth and the SLDF leaving, fine. It happened. But it's, to me, it was a bad decision because you left a whole bunch of planets completely defenseless and open to predation and war crimes by the five other successor states. Then you have... not planning the Exodus out well at all, and letting conflicts like the Prince Eugene happen. And then you've got the whole issue with the Pentagon Civil War and his awful sociopathic son taking charge and not realizing that if we're going to make a better society, we probably should have some sort of plan of something long term, because he's over 100.
Yeah. Being a shithead to the son, that's probably the most like him.
Yeah, yeah. That's the other thing. Yeah, he was really hard on Andrey, and you know, Andrey was the good son. Yeah, yeah.
Imagine how the clans would have looked if Andrey was in charge.
They probably wouldn't have looked at the clans at all.
Nope.
Nope. Yeah. So yeah, yeah. That makes sense to me, right? That makes sense to you, and
oh yeah, absolutely.
Hopefully, it makes sense to you guys.
I tried to stick up for him a little more, though.
Yeah.
And Kerensky, but you know, if he wasn't a flawed person, then we'd get a dry character like Alaric.
Yeah.
And Howard Wolf.
Yeah.
Cardboard.
Yeah, that's the thing too. Is again, he has flaws, and that's fine. You know, I don't sit there and stew and think he's a terrible character. You know, obviously he meant well, and he wanted better for everybody. But you know, these were major problems that are not really discussed too often, and I think are worth bringing up so that we get a fuller picture of the guy.
Back in the day when we had like actual characters, man.
Yeah.
Really good characters.
Yeah. With dementia. Yeah. More than an ape.
Not dementia.
Not dementia. Yeah.
From cryosleep.
Or psychoses or whatever. So yeah, guys. That's it. We're gonna leave you on this one. Hopefully that was relatively short. I don't know, maybe it wasn't. Oh, there is, we always say, oh, it's gonna be a short one, and it always ends up being an hour.
I know.
But yeah, I think you know, now we've completed our clan series, and we're gonna leave it at that. We will probably return. We thought about doing a cartoon retrospective.
I would love to do the cartoon retrospective. We need something to build morale up before we cover Our Wolf.
Yeah, because Our Wolf's going to be hard, and the cartoon's underrated. Yeah. And I was also debating about whether or not I wanted to, because it's never going to be published. You know, it never would be. But I had an idea for a novel for Somerset Strikers. So maybe.
We might talk about it in the cartoon.
Yeah, share my ideas of what that would look like. But yeah, I think you know eventually we're going to talk about Hour of the Wolf, and I think some of our disappointments with the last couple of novels and the fiction and some of the products that look snazzy, but I think have a lot of issues. And you know, Hour of the Wolf was a big morale hit to me. You know, and
yeah, you know, the thing was like the bar was set so high for that book because it is actually concluding the entire storyline.
35 years,
and we get essentially nothing.
Yeah.
Or at least what felt like nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it should have delivered on a hell of a lot more. It really should have. And I think all of the criticism it gets is completely fair. You know, I don't think we're being spoiled fans or, you know, trying to be like a referee on the sidelines, you know. I think it's, we have every right to complain.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And especially Pardo's attitude towards the whole thing.
Yeah, it hasn't been great
at all. It's pretty disgusting. And for someone who's a professional writer to... we'll have to just get into more because it's gonna involve a reread. It's going to involve a big, long breakdown. And you guys will understand why, you know, more so how disappointing it all is. And we'll get there when we get there. We'll get there when we get there.
You heard it here on the Memory Core. Far Country is a better book than Howard of Wolf.
It is a way better book. Oh, my God. It's such a better book.
It's way damn better.
Oh, man.
We will stand by that.
Yeah. I will stand by it. I will stand by it. Okay, cool, guys. Peace out. We will see you, I don't know. It's going to involve a lot of alcohol to reread Hour of the Wolf.
Yeah, we'll probably come back with the Somerset Strikers cartoon.
Yeah.
So much better.
So yeah, stay tuned to...
Eh?
I'm pointing at Dan right now. So
and I'm just staring at him blankly.
Stay tuned to the next episode of...
The memory core.
I don't know.